Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers episode 654, Candyman, with no subtitle.
No.
I would have thought we'd have gotten a subtitle on this.
Well,
one.
I mean, I think 2 and 3 had subtitles,
right,
but we don't talk about 2 and
but
3.
But we're back to Halloween and then Halloween again.
Sure.
And then, you know what I mean? So
I saw somewhere that it said this second Halloween will be Halloween 2.3 and then the next one will be 3.2.
Yeah.
It's a
lot.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be a Patreon episode where I can explain the timelines of the Halloween movies.
Yeah. So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
Literally just a straight line at this point. This is Joe.
And this is Tom. Kevin is out this week. And but joining us via the magic of ZoomTube from Cup of Soul and the Philadelphia Tribune, congratulations, it's Kathy Woods. Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, especially on short notice. Kevin had some family things. Everything's okay. We'll let him tell that story if he wants to.
Yeah.
But so before we dig into the movie proper, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get a podcast, you can find us. And while you're there, be sure and rate and review us. That's always helpful. Joe says we have a new review.
We do. A five-star review. So that's always nice.
No, that means we'll read it.
Yeah, that's right.
If you really want to mess with our heads, be like, 5 stars, this show sucks. Yeah.
Which we do have a couple of those.
We won't know what to do.
Right. This is from Carol Jenkins 1.
Okay.
As it reads, fun, casual, and informative. The best movie podcast I've heard. Some podcasts are very informative but dry. Others are funny but superficial and have no idea what they're talking about. These guys know their stuff. There are references to original sources, patterns and style of certain artists, callbacks to other movies. I love it. It has depth for movie fans, but it also like listening to three casual friends chat. I love to listen to see who I will agree with or disagree with. Great fun. The first podcast I actually subscribed to.
Wow.
Longtime listener, finally reviewing. So thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. And also, we have a Facebook page if you just can't get enough of us. Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, but don't forget our Patreon. Patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out and we like you extra. And the thing you can do doesn't cost you a dime if you want to help us out. You can share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week include Heather Sachs, David Rojas, Ralph Tribble, Tammy Sherman Powers, Gabriel Lugo, Ken Holtzhauser, Control X, In Session Films, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd Podcast, Invasion of the Remake, Geekdomy Radio, The Movie Journey Podcast, Feelin' Film, Ronnie Castle, Chris Wilson, Binge Movies, and Matt Naglia. So thank you very much. I want to say Heather Sachs posted something in the group that I thought was hysterical.
Yeah.
And she said that she has a friend at her work who is over 50.
Okay.
She's older. I can say that because I'm over 50.
Okay.
Well, I'm 50, but my birthday isn't today, so technically I'm over 50. That's how math works, right?
That is and how math works, yes.
Time is linear. And yes. So
it's a flat circle.
Right. And so she said she had a friend that went to see the movie Black Panther.
Okay.
Okay. Have you not seen this post?
No.
Oh, my God. It's adorable. She had a friend that went to see the movie Black Panther. And she came back, and again, it's an older woman.
Sure.
And she's just like, so I went to see the movie Black Panther, and I was really kind of thrown off because I thought it was like a documentary about the Black Panthers. And then it wasn't.
It is kind of.
And so she's like, but I already bought my ticket and had the time blocked out. So she's like, well, I guess I'll stay and watch this Black Panther movie because I'm already here.
Sure.
Right? So
turns out. Does she love it?
She loved it.
Yeah.
And I guess she knew Heather liked this sort of stuff. So she was like, I have a million questions. And so
what a weird place to jump into that.
Well, it would leave you with a million questions.
Yes, absolutely.
And so she was just like asking all these like Marvel Universe questions. And so now apparently she's a major Marvel superhero fan and DC stuff too. But she did not think she would dig those movies at all. Turns out she positively loves them. So I would say I think the lesson here is if you don't think you would like a superhero movie, you should go see it. And if you love superhero movies, maybe go watch a documentary about the Black Panthers.
So yeah,
maybe it works both ways.
Maybe
you never know.
Yeah, it's that's great.
Yeah,
because Black Panther was amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig into the movie. I should start by saying I've never seen a Candyman.
Did you watch the first one?
No.
Going into this one?
No.
Well, that is okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Kathy, did you see have you ever seen the first one?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm saying it like that because I should give full disclosure. I am not a person that thoroughly enjoys things where a lot of people get killed in a tragic way. So it's definitely one of those things where I saw it in college, but it was like, you know, with my hands like over my eyes.
Absolutely.
You know
what I mean? Absolutely.
And also, I'm not a fan of bees.
No.
So
it
had a lot of things going on.
You're checking a lot of boxes.
Yeah. Yeah. That first one may not be for you.
Exactly.
Not your jam.
No, but I get it though. I get people that I am not one of those people just because something is not something I love. I get why it's a cult classic. I get why people love it and all that other stuff. I do.
Okay. So just to give the recap for those that don't, it's interesting. I heard people talking on a podcast earlier this week that like horror fans are a different breed of moviegoer, right? So you've kind of got your cinephiles who will see like the independent stuff. You've got your casual fan. Horror fans are like, hey, did you see that new movie streaming on Shudder? I did. I loved it. Did you see this new, you know, like anything that is horror.
Did you see this new horror movie a guy is selling on Betamax out of the trunk of his car?
I 15th bought it.
And Pine?
He's like, that was me.
Yeah.
So like horror fans do kind of have, they're just a different type of moviegoer, right? Like they will see anything and everything they can get their hands on.
I think also it's the genre that's probably the least expensive to make.
Well, maybe comedy.
Well, it depends on, I guess, the type of comedy. But
yeah.
But
yes, you're not wrong.
But comedy is also can be broad. There's all different types of comedies.
Yes,
right. It's almost like saying dramas. You know, where horror is more of like an actual genre.
Sure.
You know what I mean,
they have
comedy
genres
more of
inside of genres.
Classification.
Yes.
And so it's also like you get a lot of like really low budget horror because you can do low budget horror in a way that, you know, you can't do low budget sci-fi.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So the original Candyman by Bernard Rose came out in 1992. Starring Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd as the two lead characters. That movie, let me get this out of the way. I think this sequel, I was going to call it a remake, but I guess it's not a remake.
Yeah, it's not.
Does not hit the mark for me in the horror world.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? Naya? Naya DaCosta? Naya DaCosta?
Is that how you
say it? Naya DaCosta.
Nia. Thank you. Okay. Where she excels is the character stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the most interesting part of this movie, where the horror aspect just seemed kind of like, when they get to the kills in this movie, they'd make no sense.
Yeah.
Like in the first movie, Virginia Madsen is she's studying cultural, urban legends, stumbles upon Candyman, gets super involved. And then it becomes the movie itself is like, is she crazy or is it this thing that is taking over her body? So like they never really give you an answer, sort of, but where the kills in that one are people who were against Virginia Madsen's character, like, okay, who they were like part of her life, and that made sense. Where the kills in this like make zero sense.
They're more arbitrary,
like very much
like the girls in the bathroom.
Yeah, that was one of the most arbitrary ones out of all of it. So I think this is, I think the remake is good, and I think the performances are good. You've got the dude that was in Watchmen, mm-hmm, and Black Manta. You've got the gal who was in WandaVision, who played like the Monica Rambeau.
Okay.
In WandaVision, she's the girlfriend in this. So it's just, I don't know, like, as good as that first one is,
yeah,
this one is a direct sequel to that, so it's kind of important to see the first one before.
You know, having not seen it, it still worked for me. I like the movie, but okay, I'm not a big horror movie guy, so I'm not sitting there, you know, bemoaning the lack of horror aspect to the movie.
Yeah.
I like it when there's a story behind the horror rather than just like, we're all in a house and there's something going to kill us.
We're going to a campsite.
Yeah. But I liked it. Like, it wasn't amazing to me. It was a good looking movie.
It was a very good looking movie.
But Kathy, what was your take on it?
I mean, I think you have different thoughts because you have a different point of view.
Yeah.
Right. Not to be that girl, but this one is unapologetically Black. She's telling it from a Black woman.
Absolutely.
Without question. Yeah.
And whereas the other one is, it's almost like a white person went into a Black space, but really didn't notice they were in a Black space and said, because the point of origin of the story is, you know, he was a former slave and stuff was done to him. But in the movie, all the people that suffer are Black people. So it's like, what? Okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, it was not lost on me that, I mean, I think every present day kill in this movie was a white person.
Yes.
And I was like, and I liked that pivot. Like, I don't say that to complain. Don't let my age fool you. You're like, oh, 50-year-old white guy with a goatee.
No, I'm actually a year older than you, so we're good. We're in the same checkbox, right?
Yeah, I just don't want
to. So, no, I feel you on that. So, to me, this felt more like Candyman was coming back to take revenge on the people making money off of his suffering.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that part didn't make sense to me, because it didn't make sense to me in the other one. I'm like, well, wait a minute. He's the victim, but you're glamorizing the other person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it's like, hey, I'm coming to get the people that are making money off of my suffering, you know?
You are absolutely right.
I think what she did, and again, I get it for horror people who wanted more gore, but what I think what she did is smart, because she made a movie that is palatable for people who aren't horror fans.
I'm not so sure which is
a bigger audience, right?
Yeah.
I went into this thinking like, I watched it in the daytime, number one. Number two, I wasn't saying that five times. That's not happening in my house. I was like, I was very surprised at how engaged I was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't, like, don't get me wrong, I was fretting there, and there were moments where, you know, like when Coleman Domingo pops up, I'm like, sir, what are you doing? Like, I'm going to need you to announce yourself, right? But I felt like you reach a bigger audience with this, right?
Sure.
It's almost like this movie, for lack of a better word, and it's doing well at the box office considering it's the pandemic and all that, right? It's going to have a really nice weekend. It's almost like set up to have a part two,
Oh, without question, yes.
I feel like you're sitting there, and what drives it for me is Yahya's performance. Like you're seeing this guy go from struggling artist, and now he's going down this road of, you know, wanting to know more about Candyman. It's kind of giving him a lease on life, but, you know, he just morphs into this other thing. You know what I mean? I liked him a lot. I said this, I might have tweeted it. I said, shout out to the hair and makeup department, because him transforming, like his skin changing, I'm watching it and I started itching. You know what I mean? I felt like I got bit by something. And that's how, I love how she shot this. You know what I mean? If you saw her first from Little Woods, you're not surprised. I love how she shot this in the textures. Like you could tell that, you know, he was going down a road. It was not going to end up well. There's a scene. I don't want to give it away. But
no, give it away.
You're fine. That's what we do.
That's what we do.
Where Candyman comes out the wall. And I'm like, you know what I mean? It's the possibility. I think for me, sometimes it's scarier that this can now go all the way south. Like him standing there talking to the kid. I'm like, this is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you mean when Candyman came out of the wall?
Yeah, exactly, right? And I'm like, it's another reason why I don't do laundry in the basement. But, you know, it's all of those things that I think she did to differentiate her from the original. Do you know what I mean?
So
I think those were smart choices. I also liked how she did use commentary. I hate when people use woke, because now the word has been hijacked and it's morphed into something silly. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm not from Chicago, so I just want to put that out there. But Cabrini Green, for those people that don't know, which is the projects that they use. Yeah,
that's a real thing.
The actual Cabrini Green is a real housing project in Chicago that, you know, not a fun place. But they closed it down in the late 2000s. And like a lot of things, they're redeveloping the neighborhood. So I thought that was like a subtle commentary. It's not in your face. Okay, wait a minute. You had this neighborhood that was considered treacherous, dangerous, volatile, which it was all those things. And now you want to build $500,000 condos here.
Right.
And now it's like this shiny new toy.
Yeah.
So I thought the way that she did it, that's how she tied it in. But, you know, just the how can I say this, a hypocrisy of things, you know, I mean.
Well, that's I think even our main character's brother.
Yeah.
Makes that comment.
Accuses the sister of like, well, you're here.
Right.
Yeah. In the beautiful
looking out like in your windows look out to Cabrini Green. And I will say in the original one, Virginia Madsen, the Helen Lyle character that they reference in this movie. Does go to, like, it's in the 90s and Cabrini Green was still operational.
Yeah.
So the story that they're telling is all that movie.
When I went back so when the movie was over, I read the plot synopsis for the original Candyman.
Yeah.
And I really liked how they incorporated the first movie.
It's really smart.
Now it's become its own urban legend.
Yes.
And the facts have gotten twisted over time. And she's become the villain.
Yes.
When she's
not, and like in the original one, you know that Tony Todd is in that, and he is the Candyman in that, and he gives a crazy good performance in that movie.
Yeah,
and you as the viewer know that he's there, but obviously when Virginia Madsen is by, you know, you see a video of her talking to him, and she looks crazy.
Yeah,
right, because he's not, nobody else can see him. So I dug how in this one, like you said, like she becomes, in the end of that movie, is she saves that, like when we get the final reveal of who Yahya is, then they get the real story. And I love the way that they turned her into her own urban legend.
Yeah.
Because at the end of, spoilers for Candyman from 1992, Virginia Madsen becomes the Candyman.
Yeah.
Like that's how that movie ends, is she ends up dying in the fire. And she comes back as the new Candyman. that they don't do anything with. when they do the next two Candyman movies, they're like, we can't afford Virginia Madsen, so we're just going to go back to Tony Todd.
Well, I think also people, like, once you've kind of established something, people don't want to see a different Freddy Krueger.
They thought they did, and then they got one, and they're like, never mind. Well, because
it was not a good movie. He was a good Freddy Krueger.
I agree.
But still, like, people, you know, they want the monster to look like the monster that they know.
Right.
And so I think that's a stumbling block.
I think so, too.
I know the movie, like, took some heat when it came out in terms of, like...
First one or this one?
The first one.
Yeah.
Because the bad guy was black.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, like, I think it was Tony Todd who was like, but, like, as an actor... I'd like to be Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's like,
he got to be Ben. He got to be Ben from when they remade Night of the Living Dead by Tom Savini. He's Ben.
Okay.
He's the main character.
Yeah, which was his goal, though. He said that when he saw the original, he was like, he knew that there was a possibility for black actors to be in horror because he saw that. He saw himself. So therefore, he was like, hey, I saw space for me. I saw space for us. And I'm a firm believer, like, let minorities play everything, right? Let them play black people. As long as the character makes sense, right? If you're just sitting in the kitchen and everybody's eating and all of a sudden the black guy gets up and starts killing people and you're like, where is this coming from?
Right.
That is crazy, right? But if you have, like, some context, whatever, you develop the character, you flush it out, then that's good. And I think, you know, again, Tony... You know, I think that character, Candyman, urban legend, I mean, like I said, is, you know, it is something, it's like the boogeyman you grew up with. You're not looking in the mirror saying that anybody I know doesn't.
Nope.
Excuse me. So,
why risk it?
So it's like, that is a good thing, you know what I mean? And it's not, it wasn't done just to throw in a black guy in there. It actually made sense, you know what I mean? And on top of that, he has the voice.
Oh, man.
He has the figure.
Yep.
He has the mannerism.
The presence.
He's frightening. And he's not frightening by, screaming, you know. It's that tone where he's like, and you're just like, oh, God.
He's kind of, there are moments where it reminds me a lot of, like, Bela Lugosi's Dracula, which I know today in 2021 isn't as terrifying as, you know, he was back then. But that slow delivery, that presence where you just he's always around, you know. So, and that's kind of where I think this one missed the mark, is like, I didn't get that from this version of the Candyman, where he just became like this thing that was for not well done jump scares. Where in Tony Todd in the original one, there were no jump scares really, but he just had this presence. And, you know, you'd see him in the back of a screen, or you'd see him, like, in these different pieces.
I liked how
there were some moments in here that were really good.
Yeah, I liked how you would see him a lot. Maybe not even necessarily that would turn into a straight up horror scene, but you would see him in the background.
Yeah.
You know, popping up. And it was subtle. Like, a lot of times I'd notice him, like, right as the scene was ending. I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, dang. There he is.
Yeah. And I liked that aspect. And going back to the conversation about having a black guy be your driving bad guy in a movie like this, I think that also goes back to when we talked about in the We Care a Lot episode, about the importance of representation, right? Like when you don't see lots of black people in movies, and then one pops up and it's always the bad guy.
That feels
like a commentary on black people,
right?
But when you see, you know, them sounds awful, sorry, but when you see black people in other roles, then they can pivot and do the other side of that coin, because it's not the only space in which they live thematically.
The more black actors they have, more opportunity, the more opportunities they have to be any character,
anything,
any character.
Yeah. Kathy, did you see We Care a Lot, the Netflix movie about the nursing home people?
I did not.
Okay.
But I will say this is, I always say this, and I especially say it on Twitter, because I don't like when people are like, well, these groups of people should make only this type of film. Make whatever film you want to make.
Yeah.
Make whatever you want. I don't, even if you're like the first one to do it of your ethnicity, race, whatever, your gender, age, somebody's got to start. somebody's got to open that door. Somebody's got to show that there's a possibility that someone from that background can make this type of movie. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I hope, I pray that we are at a point like, who cares? As long as the movie is good, yeah, you have a good time watching it. Like, you're not going to be sitting there going like, oh, who made this? Like, you know what I mean? In terms of like, I can't be into this because this person is X, Y, and Z, right?
To your point, I think Jordan Peele has kicked that door in. I think,
yeah,
given the fact that he has his own production company with Monkey Paw, who produced this, I think he has opened that door to give people an opportunity to do exactly what you're saying, is to, if you have a horror movie that you want to make, Jordan Peele has opened that door for other people to take a chance and to, you know, get that movie made. Where in the first one, I think, I'm pretty sure Clive Barker.
So this is based on a Clive Barker story.
And he was a producer on the first one.
But it bears almost no resemblance.
Zero
to the,
resemblance.
Because it was,
Clive Barker's a wackadoo.
Well, and it took place in London, the original story. And so it didn't have any of that backdrop of Cabrini Greens and all that. And then Bernard Rose moved it to America.
Okay.
And added those elements. And while there's certainly some missteps, I think for its time.
92 or 2021?
92.
Yeah.
Like, I think for its time, like, its heart was in the right place, even if it didn't always nail it.
I think he was making a horror movie, right? And I think it's a good horror movie. And Tony Todd has taken, like we said, taken that character and moved Candyman into the upper echelon of, like, modern horror icons.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Candyman is in the conversation with Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger. Yeah, so just, like, a quick rundown of this one. Our main character is an artist who found success at one point, and
had a moment, and that moment is
gone.
Gone, and he's rapidly losing the heat that moment generated.
Correct. And he's dating a woman who was like an art curator for a very small art gallery whose boss is named Clive, and I don't think that's not on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's and she is constantly trying to give her boyfriend the opportunity to get back out there. And he just cannot find the inspiration. He was a one-hit wonder. And he keeps trying. I did think, you know, we see his famous painting once, and then we see it again, like, in the art gallery, just with different colors.
Yeah, he just keeps redoing that over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
He has a moment where he starts. I think I think he finds the legend of Candyman first, and then he goes and talks to this older man there are moments when he's great, and then there are other moments where he is doing something else when we get to the end of this movie. But there are moments where he's like he's really good, and he starts divulging this story of Candy, of the most recent iteration of Candyman.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, not to interrupt you.
Yeah.
It was her brother.
You're totally right. Yes. They're at dinner.
Her brother and his boyfriend came over to their house, it's dinner or something along those lines, right?
Yes.
And her brother tells, because they are living close to Cabrini Green.
Right.
He then says, oh, you know about Candyman. And then he tells them about
the story.
Story and everything like that. Right.
Yes. You're absolutely right.
That pivots him, oddly enough, which is crazy, but he does it anyways, to want to go down to Cabrini Green and see if this was true or not. And that's when he runs into
that's right,
Coleman Domingo.
He's walking around Cabrini Green and he sees the kid that we see in the very beginning that Katya had talked about the Candyman coming through the wall, and then Candyman actually getting beaten and killed by the police department because they're on the hunt for this. It's not a serial killer. It's just like a guy who's putting razor blades in candy.
And it's kind of like any unexplained death.
Correct.
They just chalk up to Candyman.
Which, I mean, Chicago in the 70s makes a lot of sense. So he gets this story. He's walking through Cabrini Green, and at this point he gets stung by a bee. And then it's with that Yaya's, like, world starts to unravel, and he starts to unravel. They play, you know, he does the whole Candyman, well, I guess he does a an art show that talks about Sherman.
Yeah, he has an installation, and it's kind of like mirrors the whole theme. Like, if you look in the mirror and you say...
Title of the project is called Say My Name.
And we should say, and I don't know if we said it, there is a puppet theme throughout the film, which is really well done.
That was really, really cool.
And to the texture and the creepiness of the film. And that's depicted in the installation, right?
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
So you open it and it's like you're transported into Candyman's world. And the majority of people are like, "Ooh, this is super dark. This is super creepy."
It's one of the things I hate and I don't understand about the art world. I say art with like air quotes.
Like high art.
Yeah. We watched Velvet Buzzsaw and I was like, no.
Oh my God, I hated the movie.
I hated the movie, but like I also like I kind of liked the inside look where like that, you know, an art dealer will pay a critic X amount of dollars to be like, that's art.
Yeah.
And then it blows up. Yeah. You know, like I kind of enjoyed that aspect, but that was a bad movie. You're right.
Yeah.
So the folks inside the gimmick, inside the art dealer, do Candyman, right? The Clive does Candyman with his creepy relationship with his intern, and then this high school girl sees it, which is like I don't care about any of these people.
Yeah.
Because they have like in the original one, like I said, Candyman starts targeting people that are attacking or involved with Helen Lyle's life in a both positive and negative way. Where in this one it's just like these are just arbitrary people.
Well,
Besides Clive, like Clive, the art dealer makes sense.
The art dealer makes sense because also like no one care. Like the take on his new work is that it's derivative and uninspired. And
right.
Until there's a murder around it.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like, oh, you were very prescient. And like this is now the murder makes it take on
a new
air of authenticity that they didn't perceive in it previously. Right. And obviously nothing's changed about it, but and then that kind of catapults him to success. So I thought that first kill did work in that regard.
Yeah, that one
it's
did.
Like it,
yeah.
it was catapulting him back into the spotlight and making that work have a subtext and meaning that it didn't have previously.
Right, the art critic and then the high school girl is like, well, these are stupid. Like the art critic doesn't make any sense, and then the art critic makes sense in the fact that like
she was a bitch.
She was, but
like she was awful to him.
To Kathy's point is these are people that are making that are trying to make money off of the plight of Sherman,
right?
Who was the Candyman in this world? The Tony Todd version of this character exists sort of, and we finally get we'll get to that when they give a breakdown of like the urban legend of Candyman, but they are trying to make money off of the death of this innocent man.
Yeah.
Like, because we find out that like after the police officers killed Sherman in the 70s, that the razor blade candy kept showing up.
Right.
So they killed the wrong guy. So our main character starts to crack, which, you know, the bee sting is getting gnarlier and gnarlier. Like as the time goes on, he is starting to like have visions of the Candyman and see himself as the Candyman, which is kind of, you know, it's a nice little throwback to the 92 version where you're just like, is she crazy? Is she not crazy?
Yeah.
What is reality? What is not reality? And his world starts to implode. Like, his relationship that from the very beginning does seem strained, but only because he is not successful anymore, where she is about ready to explode, right? Like she's about ready in this art world. She's about ready to become this big deal. And it takes the murder of her boss.
But she also benefits from that murder.
Correct.
Right? Like she's kind of tethered to this gallery and now she's not. And
right.
It brings her attention in the art world.
Yes.
And then the installation that she brought in through her boyfriend now is perceived as being really good in a way that it wouldn't have been otherwise. So she benefits from that.
Yes,
too.
Big time. And there are moments where he is, you know, he's very manic and he's very happy where he has, you know, poured himself into this art world, and now he's starting to get a little bit darker. Like we do see a quick glimpse of Tony Todd when he being the main Yaya is painting the faces of the previous Candyman, and we see Tony Todd for him, and I was like, okay, if that's all we see of him, I'm fine with like that fan service.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of what happens at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
I did not like that at all. It seemed a little too here. Like, have this. You
yeah.
know?
I question what it was supposed to mean. Like, because I felt like they were setting this guy up to be your new Candyman.
Yeah, right.
And then they show you the old Candyman. And I'm like,
now, wait a minute.
Well, I don't understand what that means. So it was like, which guy are we getting in the next one?
Because,
a horror movie, like, they never make a horror movie these days without thinking, like, can I make 10 more of them?
Correct.
Which is fine. But so I'm like, so I didn't know how to process that.
That's fair, yes. And it was like, it's at the end of the remake of Evil Dead, they wanted to bring in Bruce Campbell. Like, they wanted to have Bruce Campbell show up at the end and have an interaction with your current character. And thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because that would just take you out of this, I don't even, rampage of a movie,
yeah,
is what that was. And then you get a little stinger of him at the very, very end,
right.
And that's it.
I do think that, I'm sorry, not to interrupt you,
but I
think that as this stuff is happening, right, his boss gets killed, which was kind of fun because he was a jerk.
Right.
I did not feel bad for him. It's like you're saying, you're painting. And I think the bee sting, the more that started to spread,
yes,
the kookier he got.
Yes.
Like there is, I did like the scene where he's looking down the hallway, but it's a mirror now, and he sees Candyman, and his girlfriend is like, what is happening? Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's looking at her like, don't you see what I'm seeing? And she, of course she doesn't. Do you know what I mean? She doesn't. And, so you're starting to get, but I do think we need to talk a little bit about Coleman Domingo, who I think is, who I adore, and I've had the honor of interviewing. He is just as scary, because to me, sometimes it's scarier. First of all, I'm like, why are you walking through the projects that are closed? That's my number. Like, I'm a person who is by nature curious, and I ask questions. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you already in a place where you're not supposed to be.
Sure.
Yeah, we should.
Monsters. And then you're having a conversation with somebody who's walking through this, and it's closed down, and it's Coleman has a baritone, beautiful, rich voice, you know. And then he's like, "You're looking for Candyman," and I'm like, "Okay, it's time to go." Like, you know what I mean? It's time to go. I came, I saw, great. Let me let go of this, because now it's starting to get like a little weird.
Do you think he knew who he was from Jump Street, or do you think that was something that developed over time?
I feel like once Coleman deduced that Yaya was there to kind of like follow this urban legend, he was like, oh, I got my sucker.
Well, I guess my question is, do you think that he knew Yaya's lineage? How about that? Before, I don't want to give that away yet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Maybe. Yeah. But he definitely, it wasn't like, hey, how are you? He figured it out why he was there.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, he peeped, in plain English, he peeped game. And he was like, oh, that's my opening I've been waiting for.
Yes.
And then as they're having a conversation, and then Coleman's character gets fed, like, as Yaya continues to come back and ask him more questions, he's like, oh, this is about to be donezo. I have my guy. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's, and it's like, I think for Coleman, what made him eerie, it's like, I'm like, he has this laugh that he does, which
yes,
I think is very effective. It's not like, hey, ha ha ha, you told a funny joke. It's like, ha ha ha, I got you. And it's very like he does a little thing with he's a physical actor. By physical, I don't mean like Robin Williams slapstick. I mean physical, that he uses his body effectively, his mannerism to get certain things across that are not on the page. Like he squinted his eyes. He did that weird deep laugh and was like, OK, this is going to be, I'm reeling this guy in. And I think that's just as scary, because now you're thinking like, what is this guy about to do?
Right, right.
And it's not going to end well. Like, you just know it's not going to end well. And even like when he was standing there with his hands on his hip, he's got two bags. I'm like, nobody lives here. Yeah. Why do you have two bags?
And you have to jump a fence to get to this point. Like,
right.
Exactly. And I'm like, off. You're here with two bags. Like, that was the first thing that, you know, that's a luxury of a screener. And I was like, maybe am I inducing things? Because now I'm caught up in the craziness of this movie, right? And I'm like, no, he has two bags. And the other thing, too, is I'm looking at Yaya. So you're not going to ask where he came from? Like, where are you? Like, that's not a conversation you're having. You
yeah,
know
he,
I mean?
he falls right into it.
Yeah.
As soon as exactly. He gets the first taste of it, he's in, and he just cannot, he cannot
he
shake it.
He fed him that little bit.
Yeah.
And it confirmed, like, his curiosity. And I think, again, because Yaya was so fixated, like, Yaya who plays Anthony, was so fixated about using this to jumpstart, restart his career, he's not having a normal thought process that the rest of us would have, that are like, we're in this abandoned thing, you have to jump over the fence, and this guy's got two bags.
Yeah, right, right.
But who did you kill? That's my thought process.
It's a nice parallel to the Helen Lyle character, because she's in the same boat that Anthony is in this movie, where she's trying to get her career. She's writing this paper, this thesis on urban legends. She's trying to get it off the ground, and she's given a piece of this legend, and she just goes off the deep end, right? With this whole urban legend, and she gets sucked into this world, and it becomes a big thing. So I do like that, like, though it is a direct sequel. Like, I mean, you can't get more direct than this.
Totally.
But it is also a soft reboot, because his character arc is very similar to Helen Lyle's character arc in the first one. So he's starting to get, you know, do a little Jack Torrance action, where he's just getting crazier and crazier and more obsessed with this world. He's seeing, like Katya said, he's at the this art dealer who kind of dressed him down and tore him a new asshole, basically.
Yeah.
She calls him up because of this murder and says, hey, I'd like to talk to you. So he kind of skips out on this meeting. I think, was it the meet? Is that the dinner that he bails on? Or is it?
Yeah, he goes to dinner with his mom.
Yes, that's right.
He dinner with her.
And I had a feeling when we don't see his mom, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to pull this off, and we shall see if they pull this off. So he skips out on this dinner with his mom to go talk to this art dealer, and she kind of says, she's like, you know, you have done something that I'm intrigued by, yada yada yada. And he was like, I don't, like, you didn't give a shit about this 3 days ago, why now? And she was just like, well, and, you know, she's kind of doing it overtly, not subtly racist, about the way she's talking about his artwork. And she even uses the term you people.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean you people? And she's like,
I mean
artists.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just like, all right. So this is the scene that Katya was talking about, where there's a mirror, and the Candyman is in the mirror mimicking everything that Anthony is doing. And just when you think it couldn't get any crazier, of course, the art dealer comes out, and he was like, I gotta go, and like goes away. This is a pretty effective kill, where you don't, like, the camera pulls back. It's a beautiful shot.
It's like Rear Window.
It's exactly Rear Window. Pulls back on the skyline of Chicago. And when, if you don't notice it right away, you don't notice it. But all of a sudden, she's lifted off the air with a hook through the face. But you can't see anything except for the blood smear going across the window.
Yeah.
Then they're at dinner. That's what it is. They're at that big dinner with, like, the big art dealer. And the news comes in that this woman has died, and he bolts. And I think, so then he gets back to the apartment. He has gone full, you know, no TV, no beer, make Jack go, you know, a dull boy. So he's painting. His girlfriend walks in, and she freaks out, right? And he cannot keep it together. He's trying to cover up the artist, and she's like, I want to see. And this is where we start seeing the candy men of generations.
Yeah.
Which is something that has never been touched on until this movie, where there are multiple Candymen from different generations of time. And he freaks out, and he passes out and he wakes up. He's got like glass in his hand and she's gone. The girlfriend goes with her brother, and her brother's like, you know, we get a little bit of a backstory that she's damaged as well. It sounds like her dad was an artist.
Her dad was an artist who killed himself in front of her. And so she's got that past trauma.
Right. So now, the little dig from the brother where he's just like, you don't have to be involved with every, you know, mentally unstable artist and blah, blah. And she was like, fuck off, you buddy. So Anthony goes to the hospital and he gets checked out, and the nurse is just like, man, I got to tell you, you are messed up. Like, you need to stick around and we need to get this taken care of. She's like,
why didn't you come in earlier? Because the bee sting went from the hand all the way up.
It is now, it's almost like leprosy is like the way I would describe it. The makeup, you know, it's like pockmarks, and it is gnarly looking all the way coming up his face.
Yeah, it's like his skin is cracking.
Yes.
When you find out the origin of him, it's interesting because it kind of makes sense when we know where he was at one point as a baby. There's your hint.
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, I found your file real easy. The nurse is telling Anthony this, like, you were born here. And he's like, no, I was born on the south side. And she was like, no, you weren't. Like, I got your file right here. You're born here. So he has a moment of crisis where he doesn't know who he is. His mom has told him these stories before. And he goes to his mom.
I don't even, that part to me, I was like, I couldn't even tell you what hospital I was born in.
St. Mary's.
If somebody was like, oh, you were born in this other hospital, I wouldn't be like, what? My whole life is a lie.
So he does. He goes to his mom's. He goes to this door, and the woman opens the door. And I literally said in the, I'm sitting in the theater, and I was like, holy.
Well, her name's in the opening credits.
But it's the same actress from the first movie.
Yeah.
Who is playing the same character. And I was like, that's brilliant. Like, that's insanely. I think Halloween Kills is going to do this similar thing where they're bringing back the actress who played the little girl. Like, the actual actress is coming back to play the same character. And so I just think that's a nice callback. And we find out that while the urban legend that has been told about Helen Lyle has grown, like Tom said, into its own legend, where she is the villain of that story. And the mom sits down and she was like, that's not true. Like, that's not what happened. She say, like, you disappeared and we thought that it was you. We thought that she had taken you. And so back in 1992, in the first movie, this woman had a baby, and Helen does cut the head off a Rottweiler, and the baby goes missing and nobody can find this baby. So at the end of the movie, they find the baby. She's in this pile. This baby is in like a what do you call a pyre?
Like a funeral pyre.
A funeral pyre, like in the middle of Cabrini Green. They're going to set it on fire to scare away Candyman.
So like a bonfire.
It's a massive bonfire. Yeah. And this baby, Anthony, is in the fire. Helen knows where he is. Helen goes into the fire to...
How did a baby end up in a bonfire?
Candyman put him there.
Oh, okay.
Like, Tony Todd kidnapped this baby, blamed it on Helen Lyle.
Like,
that first one is kooky.
It is, but it's like, it's really good. So Helen, who has been demonized and villainized, goes into the pyre and is burned alive inside this fire. It's trying to save this baby, gives the baby back to the mom. Flash forward to 20.
So it's her redemption.
It was her redemption. Yes, okay. Exactly. And now we find out that Anthony, this character we have been following, there is a line in the first movie where Tony Todd does say, like, I have a job for you, or you are now part of me. And then that's his last interaction with this baby. Well, he did have a job.
That's nice.
Yes.
I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, it's not nice to that baby.
No, yeah, but, right.
Babies are overrated.
They are. Yeah, they can be cute every once. They have to get past a certain point, and then they're all right. Then they need to get past another point.
Nature made babies cute for a reason, because they need to be. Because they're really needy, and they want you to just wait on them hand and foot.
All the time.
Like, and it's like, they got to be cute.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Otherwise, who would care?
Yeah.
So we find out that Anthony is this baby from the first movie, and Helen Lyle wasn't this psychopath. She was this woman who tried to save this baby and did save this baby. and his mom has tried to give him, keep him as far away from the green Cabrini Greenus as she can to keep him away. And unfortunately, he went back on accident,
right?
Sort of.
But he didn't realize the threat level of going back.
No, that's true. Yes,
no,
that's
fair. Yeah. And that's why the Coleman Domingo character, in my assessment, and you guys can tell me if I'm out here on the ledge, he's been waiting.
Yeah, that's how I took it.
He's been waiting.
He knew.
And, yeah. He knew. He's been waiting, and he knew. So when he saw Anthony, who Yaya plays, he was like, finally.
Yes.
Now I can do my cokey portion of this.
Yeah, right.
And the actress that plays Anthony's mom is Vanessa K. Williams, who, by the way, looks just as good as she did in the original.
They needed to do something to age her
to make
up
her look older,
because
yeah,
she looks just as good as she did in 1992.
She, like, if she had been his love interest, I would not have thought
agree
twice about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
She looks amazing, and you know, and he tries to go down that road, and she's like, we're not doing that.
I thought that sequence reminded me of the scene in Get Out when our main character kind of has that interaction with the housekeeper and she starts to break.
Yeah.
You know, like she start like the other personality starts to break through and she has that moment. I guess it's when does he take a picture of her?
Something uh-huh. like, yeah, yep. They're in the bedroom alone
and
she's
like, no. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So like that scene with Vanessa K. Williams where she kind of smacks her hands. She's like, no, we're not doing no, thank you. I've been down this road before. I'm
exactly
not going down it again. I thought it was really effective.
And I also think that's why that guy's lurking around Cabrini Greens, right?
Waiting for somebody to come.
He knows
back.
It's only a matter of time before he's drawn back,
right?
One way or the other.
And he found the sucker in Anthony, who is like obsessed with this. And the more stuff happens, and he's like, okay, we're about to.
Yeah,
right.
This is my time. This is my time to shine.
My time to shine. That's right. Brianna, that's our other main character. She starts to like retrace Anthony's steps. She finds the pen from the laundromat. She goes back to the laundromat, and she's attacked. And I initially assumed that it was Anthony, right? And then we find out that it's not Anthony. It's the young kid from the very beginning of the movie, who is now the owner of the laundromat. And she wakes up in a church and we see Anthony sitting in a chair. And this is probably the most gnarly scene in the movie, where Anthony has given himself over 100% to, maybe he didn't have much of a choice, but he has given over to the Candyman and he is going to become the new Candyman. The laundromat dude, William, starts to saw his arm,
yeah,
you know, Yaya's arm, Anthony's arm off, and Brianna has to watch the entire thing. He takes a claw or a hook and shoves it into the stump.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, this is Clive Barker. Like, yeah. Clive Barker, if you've never seen like Hellraiser or Near Dark or any of his movies, has a very gross,
yeah,
and
see,
like,
for me,
gooey.
For me, the most difficult part to watch was when his fingernail was coming out.
Oh, that's yeah,
like
it makes me think of the Cronenberg's The Fly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
and, yeah, there's a lot of Cronenberg
and
body
horror.
And
you know what it is? And Yaya is he's in like in a trance, right?
Yes. Yes.
And William is like going to work. Like he's like,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, and you're sitting there, you're like, you don't feel this, right? And Tiana Parrish, who plays Brianna, and she's just like, what in the world is happening?
Yes.
Like, how did we get here? Like, who is this guy, right? So it's all of those things that I did like that. Because, again, I feel like that gave me more anxiety because I'm like, what in the world is happening?
Yes.
And it's and the music is really good in this film, too. It's a lot of tension. And I don't know about you guys, but I get this thing where I lean forward as if me getting out of my chair is going to change anything, right?
I lean back. Like, I'm like, oh, no.
You know what I mean? It's like I lean and it's I lean forward and I'm like, what is like this? Now we're getting to the kooky part.
Yes.
The part probably a lot of people were wanting more of.
Yeah.
I don't even know if like it. I think I don't even want more of this. I think the original movie, there's only like three, four 4 kills total in the entire movie. But what that is built on is Virginia Madsen is so good in that role where you're just kind of like, is she crazy? Is she not crazy? You know, like that is built around the horror is there and Tony Todd is there, but it's not based on the horror, where I feel like this is this kind of the same boat and the character stuff is so good. Like your actors
is
so good.
She knows Brianna knows something is wrong, but you know, in order to say that it's Candyman, it's like her admitting that she's part of the craziness,
yes,
right?
How do you
just told yourself that your boyfriend is going off the rails,
right?
Because he's obsessed with something that you told yourself is just an urban legend. It's not real. Why this, that, and the third, right?
Yes. So
but then you're like, I'm going down the rabbit hole with him.
Yeah, and I'm watching this happen
to him. Because
I love him
and I want to help him. And when you're sitting there, she's tied up. All of this is going on, right?
Right.
And William has this all planned out. He's got the hook. He's got the situation. The puppets are going on. And you're just like, and she's trying to reach Anthony. And at this particular point, Anthony has left the building.
Oh, yeah. He's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Anthony is gone. The body's sitting there, but I don't know what Carl did, but Anthony has left the building a minute ago.
So this is where we get the rundown of the Candymen of the generations, where it is Tony Todd is the original one about what happened, and then when there is an atrocity committed against a black man, that man or boy takes up the mantle of the Candyman and sort of like tries to get not revenge, but like keep that legend alive. So we do get the Candymen throughout generations. And Sherman, who's the one we see in the beginning of this movie, was the last one. And now we are moving towards this baby, Anthony, who has unknowingly fought against this thing his entire life. And now he's
it's hereditary.
Well, yeah.
Like the movie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. Yes. So Brianna gets free and there's a fight and, you know, and this whole thing and the laundromat dude calls the cops and says, I know who you're looking for. He's the, you know, he's down here at the in the greens and he's, you know, got a hook on his hand and he's blah, blah. So while they're fighting projects, like I think they end up in like one of the homes. And
yeah, this is all taking place
inside,
like,
right?
Inside,
yeah.
There.
Yeah. I'm thinking this is happening inside the project.
Because when she escapes,
little bags to use.
When she escapes from the church, she ends up in the tunnels under the projects. And then,
oh, that's right. Yeah. You're right.
Because I was a little confused. I'm like, how did you get from
the
church to this
tunnel? Her and they kind of apprehend her, and so she's like,
right.
She's in the car. She's trying to explain, like, dude, there is stuff happening, and you are wasting time.
Well. This is they kill the cops show up and they she is cradling Anthony, who at this point is a mess.
Yeah,
like, he is a mess
and not a threat.
like right, his hands are down. She is cradling his limp body.
He's bleeding out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And this cop, and you don't see it, which I think is very, and it's an interesting move where the director lets you interpret everything, which happens a lot in this movie.
Yeah,
you don't see a lot of the kills, you just see the aftermath, so you are left to interpret what is happening, which I think is a smart move. So they take, you know, the cops take Brianna and put her in the back. They arrest Brianna for whatever reason.
Well, I don't know if they arrested her as much as they took her into custody.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
And then it was like, you're going to back up our version of the story.
Correct.
Or we're going to pin it on you.
And then she, you know, this is a great scene where she's like, I will tell you, can I see myself in the mirror? And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I know. Yep.
I know where she's going, right?
So she summons the Candyman in the mirror. And of course, Yaya.
I like the line reading as she summoned Candyman. Because
where she gets scared or not as scared.
Well, what I liked about it to me, it sounded like she was doing it in a way to where the cop could hear it as she's trying to start her story and she's stuck. So she's like, Candyman. So Candyman.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's doing this thing of.
She's not doing the overdramatic.
Yeah. She's not just saying it as like the girls in the high school bathroom did,
right,
where it was like all holding hands. She's like she gets to like the third one before he starts to.
And the guy's like, "Hey, what are
you
doing?"
Cop's like, "What are you doing?"
Right.
And then now she's only got to get in two more.
Right.
Where if she had started with this kind of trance like repetition,
that's fair.
It would have, while it might have on paper seemed more dramatic, it would have been, I think, less effective.
Yeah.
You know, because he would question, like, why is the cop letting her do this?
Right.
You know,
and we do kind of find out that the laundromat guy's main plan was to bring Candyman back, strike fear into the hearts, or reignite this urban legend, and have the white folk that have taken over this, the Cabrini Green, have them be scared and get out.
Right.
Like, that is the plan for what he's doing.
Like the episode of the Brady Bunch.
Like, it just like the
Brady
Bunch.
They make it evil, the sound, they think the parents are going to sell the house, and so they make it look haunted to try and scare off prospective
just
buyers.
Just like
that's
the Brady
a little
Bunch.
Scarier, though.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and he grew up in the 70s.
I think a man with a hook boat will scare more people.
I think you're probably right. I think that's a fair statement.
I'm just, given his age, there's a good chance he has seen this episode of the Brady Bunch. It aired a lot.
So she recites the name, and all of a sudden Anthony is back and he is smoking these cops. Like,
oh, I just thought you thought he was very attractive.
He is very attractive. I gotta tell you,
he looks very attractive doing it.
They fix the skin thing,
I've seen him, like, naked. Yes.
Once the leprosy, you know, goes away,
when you play Dr. Manhattan, you don't get to wear shorts.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
He's in there going to town.
Yes, you know? He takes all of them out.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has a moment where she gets out of the, you know, like, the Candyman has killed all of these police officers, and she gets out of the car and she sees him for the first time, and he's covered, like, chest to the top of his head, just bees. That's covered in bees.
Yeah.
Which is a part of the lore. And this is the scene where I was like, God, that was stupid. Like, out of everything we could have done, I did not like. So the bees kind of give way. And we see a de-aged Tony Todd to probably like the 1992 version of Tony
right.
Todd. But it is his voice. Like, you can't really replicate that voice. And, you know, gives a little bit of a speech. The speech that we get as Candyman is walking around the car is basically the same speech that Tony Todd gives in the first one. But then I was like, then why are we going back to... Like, I get fan service
right.
when done.
I think if they wanted to do this, then they should have shown... other Candyman. They should have shown him morphing into different Candyman and then landing on Tony Todd so we can have that moment.
And then going
and,
back.
And because, I, you know, I'm assuming that, like, this whole movie is designed to give us our new Candyman.
Yes, that's what I would assume as well.
Yeah.
So to end with the old Candyman, while I'm sure the fans of the franchise are like, yay, I got to see my guy.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And so I think they should have just had other... random actors to kind of be like, you know, here's the one from the 1950s and then the 1930s and then here's the one from 1880 and then land on Tony Todd and you get that
and
moment.
And now we're back to...
Then when you get this guy in Candyman 2, the Candyman can.
Farewell to the Flesh is what the original one
part needs to be
called.
The Candyman.
You wanted to say this the entire episode and this was your opening,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel it.
Never pass up an opportunity to make a Sammy Davis Jr. reference.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that is a way to incorporate that and have it make a little bit more sense.
Right.
But I dig this, what appears on the surface anyway, to be this pivot of, like, Candyman's going to be this kind of, you know,
vigilante
avenging angel that's going to go around and
he's going to right some wrongs.
Yeah,
like, and that's what he's doing, right? Like, he kills all the cops that you know, did some bad stuff,
right?
And they kill the art dealer who was trying to make money off of Sherman's pain, and they kill the other art, like
they kill the girl that was pulling bullying the other girl. Do you know what I mean?
I couldn't figure out why they even brought her back.
They killed her because she was bullying the black girl.
I'm with you.
But did you want to be funny and summon me? This is what you get in return.
That makes total sense.
It just felt unattached from the rest of the
narrative. Yes,
that was her punishment.
Yeah.
But you know, he's standing there, and he's like, "Tell everyone."
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but people already think I'm crazy, so maybe I won't tell everyone. Because that, you know, the whole thing is already like, cuckoo.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Very much so.
So, but I did think, I mean, I like that Todd was in it. I do agree with you guys. It could have been a better, you know, bookend for him. Mm-hmm. But I do get that. I like that Jordan and Nia understood that it was important to have him in this.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
You know what I mean? And again, his voice is so menacing that, you know, he tells you, tell everyone, you're going to be like, you're not going to necessarily really respond because you're like, the state of you alone tells me this is not a negotiating thing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. And right.
He already is traumatized by all the craziness that just occurred to her. You know, she's still kind of like trying to process what just happened. And now you've got the man here, and then it all comes in together where she's like, holy crap, he is real.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, Anthony wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
He really is. This is real.
And I feel like what confirms the pivot aspect is the fact that he doesn't kill her.
Doesn't kill her.
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah.
He wants her to be his oracle.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the Virginia Madsen role in that first one is what she is. Like, that's what he wants from her.
Yeah.
And she just won't give in until she has no choice. So that's I like that throwback to, like, that's kind of what we're looking at here. With the, you know, that she is like his oracle and,
yeah,
and to be his oracle. So, yeah, I think it was a successful sequel. I think it was a good movie. I think the performances were pretty great. It's fun to get, you know, back into my generation of horror. Like, the things are, you know, we've got a new Halloween movie coming out in October, which I'm super excited about. So, yeah, I think it was a solid. It has its issues, but I think overall it's totally worth your time.
Can I ask? I mean, all right. I know. I'm gonna be like, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, but because, you know, this has become the new thing where every movie has to be 2 hours, 2 hours and a half. Where you're like, Jesus, this could have been told in an hour and 30.
Yeah.
Right. I almost feel like if they would have added maybe 30 extra minutes, it would have flushed some of these things that we're talking about out a little bit. I mean, I appreciate her.
Oh, yeah, sure,
that's
sure.
That's less than,
yeah,
two
it's
hours.
It's this movie's, no, only an hour and a half. That's,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There's a part of me that's like, oh, thank you, Jesus. But I do think she could have taken advantage in this particular case because there's so much going on. And if you don't do your due diligence, that you may get lost in some of this. Do you know what I mean?
If you don't see the original one?
I feel like if you're not paying attention closely,
that's fair,
to all the different players, because it goes from slow, 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 and stuff starts happening really, really quick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I saw it as a screener. I didn't see it in a theater. So I had the luxury to kind of like rewind in certain things, mm-hmm, which the average person is not going to be able to do in a theater. So I do think, like, if she would have maybe used another additional 30 minutes to, like you said, is the introduction of Todd's character, to flush out like this whole situation with his mother, and kind of like stretch that out a little bit and used a little bit more dialogue to bring. I don't think it would have taken away from the tension and all that other stuff. You know what I mean?
I could see that. Maybe an extra 10 minutes of
yeah,
exposition.
I was thinking 10 too. I was like, I don't know that he did 30, but I think another 10 or 15 could have.
Yeah.
Definitely could have helped it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But like I said, I do think, like, when friends of mine were asking me, how gory is it? I said, it really isn't. It's more
it's
of a
really
play.
Not.
And I'm like, it's a play more of your imagination. And you're more the person that's going to be adding, you know, your fright, your tension, because it's the possibility of something happening.
Right.
And I do think, again, we'll open the film up for more people. You know what I mean? Now, again, if you are a person that wants to see more of that other stuff, I don't know if this will fill your appetite.
No, I think that's okay. I think there are, like I said earlier in the show, like, there are horror movies that are coming out 2 to 3 times a week. So there is something for everyone. If you want the gore, there's stuff out there for you. If you want, I think that they, since, to your point, since they didn't double down on the gore, you get blood and you get some like gnarly makeup.
You get your killings. You get that.
And
you,
I think,
know,
the big scene is obviously Anthony's arm getting sawn off,
yeah,
which you see happen. But I think it does. It helps keep people in the seats who maybe can't stomach something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I also think, I mean, again, I wouldn't suggest taking your 12-year-old to see it.
I got to tell you,
I took a 14-year-old.
There were kids in my theater.
You know what I mean? You know, unless you want to have a different type of conversation. But I do think, well, listen, people are weird out there, you know?
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to say this. This movie looks like it's making money. It looks like it's going to hit the 20 million mark for the weekend.
Wow. And it's about what it costs to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's a good sign, especially seeing, you know, the times that we are in.
Absolutely.
And the world, you know, I don't think it's gotten its international release date yet, but saying all of this, and I really hate talking box office in these times because it's not a normal climate, right? And we haven't even had a digital release and that stuff. I can see them wanting to make a sequel. And this this is me where I'm going like, all right, don't go back. Extend the conversation. Like, don't go back and then make some cheapo creepo thing that is factory made and just totally. To capitalize on this. There's an audience for it. I'm like, she started a very interesting conversation.
It's a smart horror movie. Yeah. Don't dumb it down for a sequel just
exactly,
to have a lot of kills.
Just to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't turn it into, like you said, is okay, we're just going to kill people and just kill people. And who cares if there's a story or not? Because people want to see. I think it's all of those things. I think all of us want to see what happens to Brianna. How does she process this? How does she come to terms with that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's the direction, if they're going to make a sequel, that they need to go into. And I also think I like Little Woods, her first film. I'm very intrigued about her as a filmmaker, and I now more can't wait to see what she does with the Marvels. She's currently shooting that in London, which is the sequel to Captain Marvel.
Yes.
So yeah. I think, and also she's allegedly the youngest person to direct a film of that magnitude.
Good
like with
her.
That
That's
type
awesome.
Of budget, she's 31.
Yeah.
We've been directing years is super young.
Totally.
But
I think the record before that was Ryan Coogler, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing is, I think we are learning. I said to someone this, the new directing talent is not coming out of like the studio system. It's coming out of the independent market.
Yeah. Yep.
We see it with Ryan. We're seeing it with her. We see it with Zoe. It's goes back to what we said is make the film that you want to make, something that speaks to you. And if you make a good film, who cares if it was made for $900,000, which is what Fruitvale Station was made for, right? Who cares if it's, you know, two people sitting in a cafe, as long as the script is good. If you make a good film and you go to a festival, Sundance, blah, 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 right? Hollywood will come and find you. They will come and give you an opportunity to make something bigger. You know what I mean? It's up to you to do something with that. But I do find it very interesting that all of these films lately, they're tapping directors who made these first very intimate, very interesting films. Like, I'm super curious what Chloe's going to do with The Externals, because she's a very, in my opinion, very intimate filmmaker. She is very subtle and lets kind of like the story drive the film.
I think the words subtle and Marvel don't really go together.
You know what I mean? But I'm curious, in the set of characters, are we going to get her style in there still? You know what I mean? Amongst all the...
Totally. Well, and we've talked about this with Marvel films in the past, and I think part of what allows that to happen is I don't feel like the directors on these films, for the most part, are directing the action scenes. Like, there's like another team that comes in because they're so CGI heavy.
Mm-hmm.
There's another team that comes in and does the action scenes, and then the director, air quote seems insulting, but I'm just trying to, but the person who is given the title of director, they shoot the guts of the film, the stuff that goes in between those action scenes, because if you don't care about the stuff in between, the action is just noise. And so I think that's why you've been seeing this kind of model of like, we'll bring in this person that knows how to handle the human element, and we'll make the human element more interesting, and then that benefits the action. And you don't have to trust, or you don't have to worry about trusting a 31-year-old who's never made a $250 million movie with, you know, how do you have Captain Marvel punch an asteroid in the face? Like, you know, like, right. That's not going to be in her wheelhouse, but she can make the emotional beats leading up to why Captain Marvel punches an asteroid in the face interesting, so you care when it gets to that moment and you're not just saying, well, this is ridiculous. And so I think it's smart. We always say that the Marvel's been moneyballing it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Like, yeah,
they,
yeah,
from
absolutely.
The beginning, like, they got Robert Downey Jr. when he was a risky proposition. They brought in Jon Favreau when he was not an A-list director that
no,
he is now.
All.
Yeah,
he
they rehabbed,
you know.
Yeah, they rehabbed Kenneth Branagh for Thor. They were like, you know, oh, it's a poor man Shakespeare, Kenneth Branagh. Like, it's, you know, like they've been doing that from the get-go, and now instead of bringing in maybe established directors who are at a fallow point in their career or have stalled out
up
or plateaued,
up and coming filmmakers,
that they can do up and coming filmmakers, or they can, you know, they can trust the, you know, what would go on to be the highest grossing film of all time to two guys that were writers on Community. Like, on paper, that makes no sense.
Right.
None. Not a lick of sense does that make. And yet here we are.
Here we are.
So,
well, I do think, and I think it's also the point here, I think, is also really important that, you know, horror is too often, I think horror also gets a bad rap. Where
you're preaching to the choir.
It's not like they only think of, like, you know, Night of the Living Dead or, you know, Attack of Tomatoes. They think of the cheesy stuff.
Yeah.
They don't talk about that. In my opinion, that horror isn't just gore, that it is things like Psycho. It is things like, you know, Dracula. I grew up with, like, seeing Christopher Lee and seeing him in The Lord of the Rings. And I was like, well, we know there's going to be some bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
It's M.O. Do you know what I mean?
There's a lot of social commentary disguised as horror.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, I think it's hard to write something that gets people where your imagination starts taking off and you become fearful before anything happens. Like, as cheesy as the first It was, there's a whole class of people of my generation that have never hired a clown for their kids.
Yeah.
That's because of this movie. You're
absolutely
just like, it's not happening. I'm not bringing a clown into my house. And I've seen this movie a gazillion times. I tell you, I still get super scared. The kid with the little boat, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, is no one, like, noticing that the kid, like, something here, like, why? And I know the answer, right? But I'm still having a conversation. I think it takes a lot of skill to get you to be so uncomfortable that you really are, like, you're now invested in the film. You want to save somebody. So I think that's hard to do. And I wish award season would be more respectful of that, other than the usual special effects, makeup,
they did,
sound, those type of things.
They did once when they gave it to Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs is about it.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. But it did. But you know what? They wouldn't. They're not going to tell you it's a horror.
Oh,
film.
No, right. It's never listed as a horror movie.
It's positioned as a thriller.
Yeah, drama.
It's a thriller.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's how they. That's how they make it. That's how they tell themselves.
Yeah,
it's not.
They
that.
Sneak
but
it past. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think we need to be more respectful of that genre. You know, granted, you know, Friday the 13th left us, like, you know, when Jason went to New York, and I'm like, as bizarre things happen in New York, he stood out. I'm sorry.
He was in Vancouver, but, you know, we'll call it New York.
Exactly. But the point still is there's a lot of, like, what Shredder is doing, what Blumhouse is doing, where they, again, giving opportunities to up and coming directors to direct horror films, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And we do need to do better, you know. And again, I hope this film doing well under these very extenuating circumstances that we're in allows more opportunity for the studios to green light original horror films.
Sure.
Like, yeah, I like this stuff, but at the same time, We don't need Halloween 800.
I respectfully disagree.
That's his jam. Yeah, but jam. Your larger point stands. Yeah, it's sure. Nice to see. It would be nice to see some new stuff come on the scene. So
create a new boogeyman.
Absolutely.
You know, a new monster. Lord knows there's plenty of material out there now.
Absolutely. You know? Well, thank you very much for joining us. Before we wrap up, let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
And Kathy, remind everybody where they can find you and all of your stuff.
You can find all of my stuff at cupofsoulshow.com. And you can follow me personal at Kathia, K-A-T-H-I-A _Woods. I'm the same person on everything.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, don't forget our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, a millionaire forged the fifth ticket.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.